Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don Neely view system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello, it's the weekend that it's John Gibbons hosting this week, and I'm on Zoom, and I've got loads of lovely faces in front of me. So clockwise from me, I've got Carl Kopeck, I've got Ian Salmon, I've got Amelia Bonner, who's selling Hoovers as we speak, I've got Chloe Bloxham, and I've got James Sawn, who'll sell anything. And we're going to talk about, well, lots of things going on in the world of Liverpool Football Club. Also, for inserts coming up, we've got a Liverpool poet, Levi Tafari, who's been commissioned by the Premier League to write a poem to celebrate LFC's title victory. And I just wanted to commission everything to celebrate Liverpool's title victory, to be honest with you. The more things, the better. And we've also got Dr. Aoife Hunt on her advice, on the advice her consultancy has been giving on social distancing in sports venues. That was harder for me to say. Hopefully I'll make a better fist of it during the interview with the doctor herself. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking about some lads who've left Liverpool. Not that you wouldn't say necessarily been busy in the transfer market, and more of that to come in part four, but some lads have left. And I want to talk about three of them because it's interesting to focus on the three of them, not least because they all signed from Southampton within 12 months of each other around 2014-15. So that's Dejan Lovren, first of all, who signed in 2014, made 185 appearances for Liverpool and 8 goals. Adam Lallana, who signed the same summer, 178 appearances, 22 goals. And Nathaniel Clyne, who signed a year after and made 103 appearances and 2 goals. So they all contributed plenty at different times, all struggled at others, but all leave in very different ways and with very different feelings. So let's explore that. Let's have a bit of an explore. And it's an interesting one, isn't it, James, when you look at sort of all three of them, really? The fact that, you know, we did have that spurt of only signing players from Southampton. And all three of them have had the moments for Liverpool, and all three of them have had sort of highs and lows, really. And yet we get to this point at the end where one of them is you know, getting a lovely framed picture of all his wonderful moments at Liverpool at Melwood and getting his tearful interview on LFC TV. And then the other one's been training with the reserves for a month and then is currently on a free transfer.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a strange one, man. I feel a bit sorry for Dejan Lovren, really. Watching Adam Lallana get presented with, you know, with his big mounted thing and everyone clapping and crying. And, you know, Dejan Lovren, you know, for all his faults, and there are many, we can do a whole podcast on Lovren's cock-ups. But he's been an incredible, you know, an incredible sort of... Yeah, he's been a great player for us. Incredible is probably the wrong word. But he's done so, you know, in I think back to the Europa League final, you know, he's one of our best players on that day. You know, the goal he scores against Dortmund, you know, there's big moments. And I think unfortunately, and, you know, a lot of it's down to social media, but he leaves with a bit of a dodgy reputation. But actually, you know, actually he's been a quality player for us, man. He's left everything on the pitch. You know, you can't question his work rate, which is possibly something you could have of Nathaniel Clyne, I think.
Yeah, do you want to make an attempt to salvage Dejan Lovren's reputation, Chloe, and so he's not just known as a wrestler who was mates with Mo Salah?
I mean, to be fair...
It doesn't look like your heart's in it, to be honest.
No, it's his career. I've said some not great things about him. But at the end of the day, he's, you know, he's wore the badge and I'll support him and I'll continue... But I hope he does well, you know, at Zenit. And Whenever he's wore that Liverpool shirt, you've always wanted him to do well. You've always wanted him to feel like he is supported, because if he feels like he's not supported and he's not got the confidence to play, then he's really not going to play well. I think the greatest game for me, to sum him up really, is Roma at home, first leg. He does absolutely phenomenal, and then like 90 minutes in, he just misjudges the flight of the ball and Dzeko puts it in the back of the net. And you're thinking to yourself, this should be dead and buried, but now they've got an away goal. And, you know, yeah, we might be 5-1 up, but still, Degsy has caused this for us. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of strange because Nathaniel Clyne, at this moment in time, I have no feelings or attachment to, because for the last three seasons, he's not really played. Where Degsy's, even though how injury-prone he is, he has seemed to always be there for us when we've needed him. He's put in really good performances at times. And then at the same time, you can't not help love a guy who plays for your team and at least shows his commitment to your team and to your club. And, you know, I assume he did something within the backroom staff in that dressing room, because he speaks about 8 different languages. He seems to be best mates with everyone. What he does behind the scenes, you don't know. And, you know, I'm now sad in a sense because he's gone. But at the same time, I think it is time, and I think that he does deserve, maybe in the last couple of seasons or whatever of his career, to actually go out on a high and be known as maybe... he ended up being a leader for us, but he wasn't on the pitch as much. So now maybe he can be that leader and that figure on the pitch for Zenit.
It's funny, Amelia, because I've been speaking to someone who used to work with Zenit this week, and she's delighted, and she says everyone there's delighted, and you know, that they've got Lovren coming in. You forget that. But, you know, Liverpool's bar is so high now, and Liverpool's standard is so high, and we're so awesome. Then for another club like Zenit, who are in Europe every year, they're competing at the top of the Russian league, which is a decent league, for them to get a Liverpool player who's played in the Champions League final for the World Cup, they're made up. They're like, brilliant, this is great. And it just kind of shows that for us, if you're not Virgil van Dijk, get out the way.
Yeah, I think it's also that thing of like, you know how you're allowed to slag off your siblings, but no one else is. And because he's ours, you can be like, oh, Blumenek, what has he done this time? Look at him, he's such a liability. But like, deep down, you do love him, and you know that there's kind of brilliance that he has brought and moments that he has brought. And I just think you're kind of, in hindsight, when we look back at his career with Liverpool, I think we'll all be able to eventually look past the fact that he just fucking loves taking a shot. He absolutely loves it, in ways that you're just bemused by and angered by quite often. But yeah, I just think it is a mark of... the thing with all of... with Lallana and with Degsy, and I guess I know less about so much with Klein, but they both seem to really care about being at Liverpool, which is an important thing. And as you were saying about the kind of... you don't know what they're doing behind the scenes and the effect that they're having on people mentally, and there must be a reason people like having them around. And I think that was a big thing with Lovren as well, that you could see how much it meant to him to play at Liverpool. I think Anna Walsh once was sat near... like, she was sat somewhere in the ground where his family were behind her. And she said, like, his mum was crying and was, like, really, like, overwhelmed by getting to watch him play. And you just think that's a mark of... I don't know, it obviously means a lot to them, which is nice. And you always got the impression that you didn't really take it for granted, which is also nice.
And we'll always have Dortmund, Ian Salmon. We'll always have Dortmund.
We will always have Dortmund, no two ways. It's one of the most glorious moments in the last few years. And without that header going in, this year doesn't happen. It's that simple. Everything follows on from everything else. That header doesn't go in. We don't get to the UEFA final. We don't build from there. Degsy Lovren has had moments where he's been an absolute colossus and somebody you could depend on in the fight. He's had moments where he's absolutely gooning things. He's always been capable of one major error in any given game. And I have just described Rio Ferdinand's career there as well, because he was a similar player. He could, a more stylish player than Lovren. But there are loads of defenders who have been capable of making that kind of error that he's made. And we've punched them more. There's something people don't talk about with Lovren, and that's his actual life and what's built him as a person, what his character is.
Exactly.
He's a refugee from a war. At 3 years old, he goes back to Croatia. I've just got it up on Wikipedia. He can't settle a school because he can't speak Croatian, because he's been brought up in Germany. So what he's actually overcome to bring himself up as a footballer, to become with no two bones about, no two ways about it, a guy who played in the European final and the World Cup final has proved himself to be able to compete at the very, very highest level. The abuse he's had has been measureless. And there have been moments where I've never wanted to see Dexy Lovren in a Liverpool shirt again. But he's come in the next game and he's done well. And Klopp's trust him to do well. And he's clearly loved. And yeah, I don't know why he's not getting a plaque like Lallana's getting at the moment. But, you know, he's done well for us overall. And wish him well at Zenit. Wish him well with everything he's doing. And he's Mo's best mate, so...
Yeah, I mean, Ian makes a good point there, Carl, in that his bounce back ability is phenomenal. Do you know what I mean? Just when you think you're never going to see Dejan ever again, he comes in out of nowhere and plays brilliantly.
He did it after that. I can't remember what the game was now, but everyone remembers his performance against Tottenham in the 4-1 at Wembley, where it was literally, I mean, he got a lot of abuse for that, and I was adding to that volume that day from the abuse he was getting. Well, I watched the game back, and let's just say Joel Matip and Joe Gomez, they didn't get the same abuse, but obviously because Dejan was a bit more demonstrative about just how bad he was that day. But I remember like the next five games he played, he was absolutely fine. And normally you think, you know, the ball comes in, your head would go a bit thinking, am I going to have another Tottenham there when I'm bizarrely trying to clear the ball off Harry Kane while standing on the touchline despite playing centre-back that day. It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen. I always quite liked him because there was one incident when we played Watford, the Emre Can overhead kick game. And we've got to win that game. And at the end of the final, we saw the players come over for the applause, etc. And I was quite low down in the crowd. I think you might be behind me, actually, Gibbo. And he just came over and he just roared in everyone's face as he ran past. Like, he knew that really meant something to him. And I thought, well, that, you know, you can't make that up. That is not fake. And I like him for that. And the abuse he gets, is, I think, is just because of social media and everyone suddenly wants, you know, 15 Beckenbauers as centre-backs in their time. And you're not going to get that with Dejan Lovren, but I've got no beef with him at all. I thought he was fine. Apart from when he was really, really bad. Because when he was bad, he decided to go incredibly bad.
Yeah.
But the next game, he'd be fine again. Yeah. A really strange player.
Really?
What was the Everton game, the last game he played for, Seb? Because he nearly conceded a goal.
Yeah, when he got done down the side, yeah. Absolutely ripped to pieces by... I can't remember where it was now.
I think that was Richarlison or Calvert-Lewin. And that would have been a hell of a way to go out.
Goodison Park is his last ever appearance, yeah.
I thought for a horrible second it was going to be Walcott, which would be the worst way to go out possibly. Being absolutely done by Theo Walcott, age 36.
I've just checked that it was Goodison Park, the power of LFC history. So there we are, Dejan Lovren. It was once said about the Anfield rap that you definitely know when the Anfield rap are in a room. I would say about Dejan Lovren, you definitely knew when Dejan Lovren was on a football pitch. And fair play to him for that. But Adam Lallana, James... he's, you know, as I say, he's had all these plaudits this week, and it's been really nice. It's taken me a little bit by surprise, I'll be honest with you, but it's been a sort of pleasant surprise. You've really seen how much he's meant within the squad and how much respect he has for his work and how he applies himself and what he's meant to this team in terms of their developments.
Yeah, you know, going back to what you were saying before about... how important these players are to the dressing room and you know, the side of it that we're not privy to. You only have to look at the praise that's come out about him and the people that have laid that praise on him. You know, James Milner, Jordan Henderson, Jurgen Klopp, you know, big figures, people with big footballing backgrounds all say that he's a lovely guy. He's an incredible professional. You know, it's been said that he was, you know, one of the most talented English players. You know, he was full of tricks. He was great to watch on his day. I'm tinged with a bit of sadness, to be honest. I don't feel like, apart from there was maybe a bit of, I think you put in the agenda, 16-17 is probably his best season. Yeah, I'd agree with that. He's undroppable for a large portion of that season. But then, you know, injuries and again, you know, Liverpool raising the bar. You know that. It's so highly set, you know, you can't just walk into that first team if you've been injured. So I do feel a bit sorry for that. But I think, you know, he's going to have he's got a great career ahead of him. I think he's going to go into football management. I wouldn't be surprised. Just a great professional and you know, sort of carried the Liverpool badge with honour, I think, for me. And that's always a really, really lovely thing to be able to say for someone that's played for so long. And, you know, don't forget... you know, he's been there through some pretty shitty times, you know, some real ups and downs. But yeah, a great pro. Always really liked him. Loved seeing him on the pitch. Both feet, skillful, could do it all really. Yeah, sad to see him go.
Yeah, he was a nice player on the eye, Chloe, and that always sort of helps. You know, you don't get marks for artistic development, but you know, maybe you should, because Lallana would have been, you know, would have been high up in the list on that. But also, you know, he was contributing as well, and I remember in a lot of those. Big statement early Jurgen Klopp performances. Lallana not only played but scored. So he scores away at Manchester City when we go and beat them 4-1. He's in the front three. Then Klopp's first full season where we beat Arsenal at home 4-3, and he scores in that one. And then I remember Leicester at home that season as well, when they came as champions and we had the big stand there for it. And he was part of that brilliant performance, scored in that again. And he just seemed at that point to really be central to all the good stuff Liverpool were doing.
Yeah, I think what he's most vital for me, though, was the start of the pressing from Jurgen Klopp, because I watch him now, and no matter whether it's deep in injury time, he's still giving everything to close that ball down, to close that person down. And, you know, from someone watching on the TV, maybe you don't realise, as you can't see the full pitch, but he is constantly, you know, closing the ball. He's constantly working hard. And I think maybe his maturity in that dressing room and his resilience to, even though he's injury prone and had so many injuries, that he's still worked hard to try and at least come back on the pitch and at least be available for Jurgen Klopp to select. It shows his character really. And I think the thing about Lallana is that I never realised until, you know, I saw him nearly crying, how much I actually liked him as a player. I knew he was skillful. His close control is unbelievable. He can turn you. He body fit. You've got no idea what Lallana's going to do. He can just turn you. He may not have the pace, but his actual ability on that ball to keep it is unbelievable. And we will miss him in the sense of what he offers the backroom staff, and you know what he's given to the young players. I'm pretty sure the likes of Nico Williams, Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones all came out and said, you know, what you've done for us as players coming through is brilliant. And he is now, all of these players, by the way, maybe not Nathaniel Kahn, but Lovren and Lallana are Liverpool legends. They wrote history. They've done something with this manager, with this team, that no other Liverpool manager has been able to do. And no matter what you rate their whole performance as Liverpool on averages, they're still going to go down as history makers. And every single one of those lads are just as important as the next. No matter if you're Mo Salah or if you're Degsy or if you're Harvey Elliott, you've all contributed to Sutton to make us win this, to help us get to the Champions League final and win the final. And, you know, that doesn't come out of not just being great talent, it comes with attitude. And I think that really encapsulates Adam Lallana, because his attitude is outstanding. You don't hear a bad word about him. Everyone seems to be best mates with him. He's just a knight. Like, he's a leader that you never really realised was a leader, I guess, because when you see him on the pitch, you know, he's great, but you don't see him as that figure like Virgil van Dijk and Henderson who'll fume at you and give you one. But evidently, he's respected for other reasons, maybe helping people along in their process of rehabilitation, because he's been injured that many times. You know, the mental aspect of what he can offer for someone who's coming through. As a young Englishman as well, when you're English, you get hyped over as much and you end up being not as good as you was originally supposed to be. So he's been a big personality to Liverpool, and I'm thankful that I've been able to see him. And to be fair to him, I hope he does well at Brighton. He looks great in that Brighton kit, by the way.
He does, really suits blue. What's he been doing here all these years? Looks terrific in blue.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. The only time I've actually thought of blue looks decent on someone, but I really hope he does well at Brighton, and I think he'll be their main player and everything that goes through them.
Yeah, he's played 15 league games this season for Amelia. And when I saw that, I was like, when? I can't believe it. I mean, we obviously all remember Man United away because he scored, but it does show that obviously with his problems with injuries, but whenever he was fit, Klopp liked to use him and sort of throughout it. And so not just, you know, we've just talked there about Klopp's first year and how good he was, but throughout his time, whenever he was available, Klopp would always find, you know, a role for Adam Lallana, which shows just how highly he thought of him.
Yeah, well, I think I'm a big proponent of whatever the manager thinks is the best choice, but with in anything, it wouldn't matter what choice he was making.
I bet you don't like that at work.
The manager of football team. But I think that is the mark of the player with Adam Lallana, that he is. He's really reliable, and when you see him on the team, she always go, yep, great. And I think to a lesser extent than Jordan Henderson, I do think he was underappreciated or kind of wrongly criticised for quite a bit of his Liverpool career, or I guess the last part of it anyway. And I think that, like with Henderson, we almost got to a point last season where it was kind of like, you really can't criticise any of these lads because they're so absolutely brilliant. And I think with Adam Lallana, it almost took that kind of critical mass for people to really realise how brilliant he was. He wasn't as underappreciated, or I guess didn't get the kind of the unfair criticism that the Hendo got to the same extent. But I think, I know you'd sometimes hear when he was getting brought on, or if he made a mistake, there'd be kind of like an extra edge to the criticism of him that you don't get when the likes of Van Dijk make a mistake, because they're kind of, you can't criticise them. And I just think he's brilliant, and his attitude, as you say, is brilliant. And it's not just things like Man United, where he manages to kind of steal us a draw at the end of what would have been a really important defeat, actually, if that had happened, and things might have gone very differently had he not done that. But it's also, as Chloe said, it's everything he does on the pitch. It is that close control and keeping the ball, and it's not just the kind of like the belting occasional goal that you'll get to see. It's the stuff he's doing all the time that is just incredibly impressive. And I always think he's a player that whenever I watch replays and get to see what he's doing up close, I just think, fucking hell, you are absolutely incredible. And I guess maybe you don't appreciate that in the same way when you're watching it kind of not looking right in close to him. But yeah, that and him and Jordan Henderson are room buddies, which, you know, can't undervalue, can you?
James Milner wrote something about Adam Lallana in one of the final programmes, Ian, and he was talking about his impact for Liverpool, but also his quality as a player. And he said that, in his opinion, that 16-17 year, he was the best English player playing in the Premier League, which is some compliment from the fellow Englishman, James Milner.
Yeah, he's an excellent footballer. It's as basic as that with Lallana. He is a genuinely excellent footballer. Obviously, we've all said, he's Klopp's general on the pitch when he comes in. You've got that first game against Spurs where he runs himself into the ground and collapses into Klopp's arms. Yeah. But his ability to retain possession high up the field was severely undervalued in those first couple of seasons, because if you needed an out ball and you needed to keep it high up, Lallana would keep the ball for you. I think it's not just, again, as we've all said, it's not just his ability as a footballer, which can't be doubted. The only problem he's had is injuries, which is bad luck, basically. It's his quality as a human being. Everything that everyone said about him, the fact that Klopp was willing to keep him for an extra 2 months in the squad, where he would get a salary each week, which apparently was lowered to £30,000 a week, but still $250,000 to keep a lad who you're not going to play, because one, you want to experience winning the league because he deserves it, and two, he's fantastic in the dressing room. Like, that speaks volume for him. The fact that he's gone to Brighton when he probably could have got a better payday elsewhere,
yeah,
I think speaks volumes, because the lad's gone home. He's just gone back down to the South Coast.
Yeah.
He's playing out his career, playing at home, which is fantastic. I've got all the time in the world for Adam Lallana. I think, as James said, he's clearly going to be a manager at some point, because he's a very intelligent footballer. He understands the game and he clearly knows how to bring players through. Wish him nothing but the very best of luck. I hope to see Brighton do really well next season, though.
Yeah, I'm already looking forward to hopefully welcoming him at Anfield, Carl, in his lovely blue kit that he suits really well. It'd be nice to see him do well there. They've offered him a 3-year deal, so they've obviously got faith in, you know, the shape that he is in and what he can, you know, add to their football club.
Yeah, I'm really pleased he's gone to Brighton and not Southampton, because they give him dogs abuse every time we played them. I don't know if you remember the League Cup game where we beat them 6-1 with Sadio scoring actually for them, and their end was just singing beautiful songs at him, and then we literally scored and we started singing Adam Lallana, he's winning the 6-1, which is one of my highlights of that season. I'm really pleased he's gone to Brighton. As Ian says, you know, he could have gone to anywhere in London, or, you know, anywhere else really, but to go to a pretty unfancied side, and I think he's perfect for them. I think he's exactly what they need, because he's just a very, very wise head. I always think that when he did get a little bit of, as the media says, like a sort of incremental abuse, sort of, you know, he didn't have a bad game. It was under Lallana sometimes, because you don't always see what he does unless you're actually at the ground. But I remember when he played against Burnley and he hadn't played all season. When he came on, we beat them last season 4-2. And man of the match, by an absolute mile. The ground's going mad, by the way, when he walks out. He's thinking, oh, he's bringing on Adam Lallana. And yeah, absolutely ran the game. And he's just a very, very quiet, efficient player. And I just really like it. He's a nice man, and you can tell he's a nice man because he's going back to the South Coast again. I just sort of wish it'd be Southampton just so they all go, no, we liked him really. He was all right.
Just banter.
Yeah. It was just really, really horrible banter for 4 years. It was.
Did he captain the side that played Everton in the FA Cup?
Yes, yeah, and he was brilliant, yeah, and it is worth...
Proper captain's performance.
It is worth sort of finishing on that for him.
But he was also captain for Southampton when he was really young, wasn't he? He was like 21.
Yeah.
He's always had that in him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He was brilliant that day against Everton, and, you know, he was one of my favourite performances of the season, team performances, and yeah, he was just brilliant in terms of how he led that very young team. So on to Klein then, James, and I'll start with you again. It's a strange one for Nathaniel Klein. I was having a little look at his Liverpool career, sort of prepping for this, and I mentioned before he plays 103 times for Liverpool. It's 93 appearances in his first two seasons, and 10 in the three after that, which is just crazy, because for those two seasons he was Mr. Consistency. He was Mr. Steady Eddie. I remember I was doing the match ratings that season before Ben Johnson very much made them his own. I remember like every week going, what am I going to write about Klein? Do you know what I mean? Because I was like, I'd run out of jokes, I'd run out of things to say. He just played like Nathaniel Klein every week.
I don't really understand what's happened with him. Because like you said, I mean, I remember, you know, he was in the side constantly. And like you say, he was kind of Mr. Dependable, but he also played fullback, he played centre-back, he was doing a really good job. I don't know if it was to do with Trent Alexander-Arnold's sort of, you know, rise and maybe sort of forcing him out of the squad, maybe his fitness, but it's just such a strange one. If he'd have told me, you know, 3 years ago that he'd have ended up leaving like this, I don't think I'd have believed you, because he seemed like he had everything in front of him to have a really solid Liverpool career, and maybe not a first team, maybe not a starting 11, but certainly a squad player. And it's just a really strange one. I don't really have a huge amount else to say about Nathaniel Klein. Like,
you should have tried doing the match ratings 2016-2017.
I wish I had something more intelligent or thought-provoking to add about Nathaniel Klein, but I just don't really give a shit. And that's like the worst thing I can say, because, like, you know, he just became a non-entity, and that's really sad, because he's obviously a talented footballer, you know, solid performances, and just fell off a cliff, and that's kind of it. Can anyone offer anything a bit more interesting?
Do you know what's mad? Is in the 2016-17 season, I've Googled this isn't my knowledge, sorry, he had more league minutes than any other Liverpool player that season. Because he played all of the final four matches of the season. Like, that's mad. I can't remember the last time I saw him.
Yeah. I've forgotten about him.
Yeah.
I can actually. Didn't he play against United? He came out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's right.
It was like he just, I wrote about it. I said he's like a college kid. He's just come back from day release just to do like a 90-minute session in his company, then he's gone off again.
Yeah,
and he was really good as well.
It was the only league game he started that season. Yeah. He starts two games. This is 18-19. He doesn't play at all last season. Obviously, he has quite a bit of Bournemouth. Plays two games. A League Cup against Chelsea, where we lost, and then thrown in madly against Manchester United as well. It was a funny career, Ian. But when he was on it, you know, he was England's right back as well. And, you know, it was looking like one of our better buys at the time, because the transfer committee was all over the shop at that point. But, you know, he looked like one of the better ones.
When we gone, I think it was seen as a bit of a coup, because he was the right back that we needed, the right back we wanted, and he was a quality player. And yeah, those first three seasons, he does look it. I think when Klopp comes in, the team kind of evolves past him a bit. And he just kind of falls by the wayside. I was shocked to see he was leaving because I forgot he hadn't already gone. It was one of those where it's like, was he still here? I thought he was elsewhere. And he's kind of, you thought at one point he could have possibly done a job filling in at left back, but then Milner moved ahead of him in the left back stakes.
Yeah.
So whatever's happened there, whether it's form, whether it's fitness, whether it's whatever, if he's just kind of been lost to the team, so it's just kind of dwindled away. So I don't know what his next move is, because it's not like he's been in the shop window in the last few years at any point. So
what's going to be difficult for him is that the likes of Adam Lallana can go to Brighton and doesn't really have anything to prove. Like, they'll be, and no. As you said about like the Degsy signing, everyone's going, yeah, get in, we've got him, because of what he's done at Liverpool. And I think that what would be difficult for Klein is, you looking at your own career, you could think in those kind of like the early days of the Klopp era, he's really important in laying that groundwork, and he's like, he's making loads of appearances, and now wherever he signs, Premier League or otherwise, he is going to have to kind of prove himself all over again, because he has essentially just escaped people's memories and people's consciousness. So it just seems mad that you can go from there to here. And it does actually, like, the more I think about it now, the more I just feel really sad for him, because you think if he's playing for us at a point where, I mean, it's like a point where we actually really needed like someone to be reliable. He's like Mr. Reliable. You needed good players, and you needed players you could rely on. And then, yeah, now he doesn't really have anything to show for it.
Well, we had years of Glenn Johnson, didn't we? And that's exactly why we needed him, because, you know, sometimes Johnson would keep the ball in, but not always.
Yeah.
And I think what's really counted against him more than anything else is crossing wasn't a strength. And for that Jürgen Klopp team, he needs, you know, which relies so much on the fullbacks. Klein didn't move forward much. It just wasn't what he liked to do. And we just sort of needed that. But it's weird to think about it. Like, I'm fairly sure he plays in the Euros in 2016. He's England's right back at a major tournament.
Mm.
And now he's training in the park like Adrian. on his own. It's just absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
Like how old is he now?
29.
Wow. No, that's a big.
I'd have guessed 32. He seems older.
He's got. Surely he's got one more. He's got one more club in him. Surely
he's got a 4-year deal, I'd say.
Yeah, maybe that's what he's holding out for. Maybe he's holding out for the right deal. Maybe he's got offers coming out of his ears and he doesn't know what to do with them, like Amelia with a Hoover. So, you know, which one?
Honestly, I'm on pins here because he's going to turn up in 5 minutes.
Oh, we'll round this part up then. I will just say, I might have mentioned once or twice DJing at the end of after the party in the Champions League final in Madrid. I've tried not to reveal too many details from it. But I will say that I've said before that it finished up at 7 a.m. with the hotel putting the house lights on and telling me to shut up. And I will reveal that Adam Lallana was team 7 a.m. So there we are. Maybe that's why he got a plaque. Okay, we're going to have a little bit of a break now. I've got those calls that I mentioned before, and with Levi and Aoife, and then we'll be back in the room to talk about transfers, you lucky, lucky people. And it's John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Levi Tafari, who is a Liverpool poet, writer, and legend, I would say, here in Liverpool, Levi. So welcome to the Anfield Bath.
Yeah, give thanks, man. It's a pleasure and an honour to be here and talking to you, John.
Yeah,
as a Liverpool supporter and as a as a Liverpoolian Scouser writer.
Well, it's nice to be talking to each other about being champions as well. And, you know, for this football team, you know how much, obviously, living here and being from here, you know how much that the football means to all of us here in Liverpool. So it's great that we finally get to call our team champions, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, football, and particularly Liverpool FC, has put the city on the map, because you go anywhere in the world, and you say from Liverpool, and people don't ask the question, where's that? Everybody knows Liverpool as a city. And because of music, football, and I suppose the culture in general, you know, but yeah, LFC have put Liverpool as a city on the map.
I know, absolutely, absolutely. So when the Premier League approached you and said, Levi, can you write a poem about the celebration? It can't have taken you long to say yes.
Oh, no, it was like, you know, is the Pope Catholic? It was like, yeah, man, definitely. I was really honored. It was a great honor. And I said to it straight away, you know, got some ideas. And they've kind of guided me and say, well, how they would like the poem to go, the kind of vibe they would want from the poem. And I just took that brief on board. And I thought, yeah, this is how I'm being a kind of oral rhythmic poet, you know.
Yeah.
I had to kind of be rhythmic. But I wanted also to include things to do with the city.
Yeah.
And some of the chants that the fans do, you know, on the cop. And just to make it inclusive for everybody, you know, that's associated with Liverpool Football Club and the city. And, yeah. So that was the vibe. But yeah, it was a great, and I was, yeah, really surprised. The Premier League got in touch with myself.
Yeah, I mean, and everything you wanted to do, you have. It's been so successful, and I believe around 3 million views now on Facebook alone, which just shows how much people have enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, I've had some really nice comments from the United States of America, from, you know, Brazil, because we have a Brazilian contingent, people tweeting me from Tunisia, from all over.
Wow.
And, you know, some really nice comments. Yeah. My followership has gone up.
Well, that's great. I'm much deserved. You talked there about using, you know, the rhythm and also some of the chants from the cop as well. As a poet, you must be quite impressed with the creativity of the cop. What the supporters on there managed to come up with for the players sort of so quickly.
Well, what's interesting, right, is that when you watch football and you see teams being played, and if they're playing against Liverpool, they'll have chants against Liverpool, or they'll, you know, they'll say stupid stuff. Whereas the Reds don't have to curse any other team because we've got our own chants.
Yeah.
And we chant those chants. And like you say, Scousers are quick. We've got an oral tradition, you know, and I reckon that comes from storytelling, because there's a large Irish contingent in Liverpool, that Irish influence, and they have a tradition of storytelling. You have the African influence as well, because the oldest black community, or continual black community in Europe. And that again, you know, is an oral tradition. So people just come up with things really fast. And then there's that comedic element to it. You know, Scousers have a great sense of humor. So, and because we're well-traveled as well, because Liverpool has done well in Europe, and they've travelled around Europe so often because we've been that good. They've picked up stuff from there as well. So you can hear it when, you know, some of Jamie Webster's stuff, and it has that kind of Spanish flavour to it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting sort of hearing all those influences come together. And that's what makes the city great as well, I would say.
Well, we have the term Scouse, don't we?
Yeah.
And Scouse is a stew. And a stew is an eclectic mix of ingredients. So you've got everything in there, in the pot. So Liverpool is truly a cultural stew, a cultural Scouse.
Yeah. No, it's a brilliant way of putting it. The city as well it's a very proud city, isn't it? But we're even more proud when the football team's doing well. And, you know, you know, when the team's not doing so well, obviously we're still sort of proud of the city. But when the team's on the top, everyone kind of walks a little bit taller, don't we?
Oh yeah, yeah, walking on air, man. It's true. Because when Liverpool won it, we were just bouncing, you know. And it was weird because of the self-isolation stuff. Usually the family get together, my son comes round, and you know, friends, and we'll watch it. Because to be honest, I haven't been able to get to the match for a little while. I haven't been to a live game. Just a lot of times I'm away gigging, or, you know, if I'm touring or stuff. But it was just the Chelsea City game. It was like watching that on TV. I must read, but it was like, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah,
but there've been plenty of them nights, you know.
No, absolutely, absolutely. It's a wonderful time to be a Liverpool fan, and this poem's encapsulated it all. And also, what I really like about the poem, Levi, is that it tells the story of the journey. So, you know, you mentioned obviously the dark times in the city as well, and for the football club, but also the people who've helped along the way. You know, the managers who didn't quite get there, but you know, the players who didn't win it, but obviously contributed. You know, to where we are today.
That's true. I mean, not even singling him out, but I feel for Stevie G because he should have won it. Him and Carragher, you know, they were in some great teams and they come so close. And it's just a pity that they weren't there in Klopp's team, you know, in terms of for all the work and stuff they've put in. It would have been nice for them to get a Premier League medal. But you never know. He might do it as a manager in the future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, with the Reds.
Who knows?
It's still a possibility. But no, it's great to see them win it because 30 years, you know, waiting and waiting. And I always make the joke when people ask, when did you write that poem, Levi? I always say, I wrote it 30 years ago. I kept changing the names of the place. And hopefully one day we'd do it.
I was going to say, let's hear the poem then, if you don't mind, Levi. I know you've got it there. If you can read it to us, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a pleasure. So, LFC Poetry in Motion. We are Liverpool. Listen to the roar. We are Liverpool. This means more. Take a look around the Alba Dock, see the live of birds, the live of clocks, sail the ferry across the Mersey with a famous skyline steeped in history. Two cathedrals adorn Hope Street, the Baltic Quarter, the Cavern, Mersey Beat, city of culture, known worldwide. We are Liverpool with a ticket to ride. Now on the other side of town, green velvet turf laid on the mound, Fortress Anfield, hallowed ground, a football shrine, we wear the crown. Cup heights flood through the gates, special nights we celebrate, LFC cream of the crop, anthems ring out from the cup. LIV, ERP, OOL, Liverpool FC. Now whilst the Reds were ripping teams apart, fans walk with hope in their hearts. Shankly for Paisley, Fagan, Dalglish, football excellence, Europe's elite. The live of birds, the Liverpool crest, LFC, where the colours of success, the 70s and 80s, total domination, every season, a cause of celebration. King Kenny, John Barnes, Ian Rush supreme, winning multiple trophies, an outstanding team, Heysel, Hillsborough, disaster and pain. Justice for the 96, here we come again. Now, since the 90s, it's hard to believe it's been 30 years since we won the league. Suarez, Torres, Stevie G, Carragher, Houllier, Rafa, one family. Now, I remember the time when the team slipped up. I couldn't believe we didn't win the cup. Then the normal one hit the scene. In Klopp, we trust for filling dreams. Salah, Mane, Trent Firmino, Van Dijk, Ali, Captain Hendo, heavy metal football, blowing teams away. We are Liverpool, that's the way we play. Ale, ale, ale. Ale, ale, ale. Ale, ale, ale. Champions of Europe, champions of the world, this is our story, watch as it unfurls. Home and away, we are dynamite. We've won the Premier League. Now the future looks bright. Poetry in motion. We are Liverpool. Yes, poetry in motion. We are Liverpool. Yes, poetry in motion. We've brought the Premier League home. Yes, we are Liverpool. You'll never walk alone.
I feel like I need to applaud.
Thank you.
It's made me want to get back in the ground so much. Maybe what those chants, I nearly joined in with you, Levi, but I didn't want to ruin it. Thank you so much. Thanks for doing it. Thanks to the Premier League, obviously, for asking you to do it. And as
yeah,
I say,
and It's a pleasure doing this interview, man. You know, thanks for asking me to come along. Because I watch, you know, your channel and
I see
you with, you know, I'm always looking at Liverpool stuff online.
Yeah.
You know, let's hope we can repeat it again next season and we get the right players in to fit in the places for those who may leave, you know, during the summer. And we repeat the process again, man. You know, four trophies and a major trophies as well in a 12-month period. Absolutely fantastic. You know, no one can say anything. People can't point the finger anymore. Because when they do this, three pointing back at them.
It is right. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thanks for doing the poem for us and best of luck with everything.
You're welcome. Nice one, John. Yeah. Take care.
We're back with the team at Harry's, John. Very, very pleased to partner with them. They've been with us for so long, they must be absolutely delighted that neither of us have committed to a beard.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I was having a little look through Harry's stuff and I was finding sort of inserts for them back from sort of 2017. So it's, you know, it has been a long time. So yeah, thanks to them for obviously supporting us for so long. And yeah, as you say, Neil, sorry, we must have been doing something right all this time here, not at least not growing too much facial hair.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Harry's, you know, keeping Neil and John smooth shaven since 2017. Feels like it could be a new tagline for them to fully commit to, I'd say. I'd like them to go all in on that. I think they can definitely do that one. You can get your trial set for $3.95 by going to harrys.com/Anfield, harrys.com/Anfield. And that's $3.95 for that. And with that, you get all the stuff that's there or thereabouts. But John, I think one of the key things about this, and we always say it, but it does matter when we do these sorts of read-throughs, is we always do want to sort of trial the product. And we did trial Harry's in 2017, and it is fair to say we haven't looked back.
Yeah, no, I certainly haven't in terms of my own usage. I think it's really good. I think the razors, the business, really like the gel. I think I've said this before, but I struggle a little bit with sensitive skin. So if I haven't got a good shaving gel, I do cut or just not even so much cut as, I don't know, just sort of chafe a bit, I think.
Irritate, tingle away.
Whereas the Harry stuff never had any issues. We've got the travel blade cover. Well, I say had, in past tense. There was at some point a travel blade cover that just disappeared. And then everything they send you. And also I like that you can tailor it to your own usage. So if you're a frequent shaver, if you're every day, then they can send you a bit more. But if you're a bit more infrequent, a little bit baby faced, like a young Josh Sexton, if you like, and you're not shaving quite as often, then they'll send you a bit less frequently. So it's a subscription service that works for you.
Indeed it is. It's harrys.com/Anfield, harrys.com/Anfield for every little bit of this. By taking less profit, they offer the great quality product at the fair price. And their amazing quality blades are almost half the price of the leading five blade brand. So do sign up if you haven't done already for Harry's. Do go and claim your trial set. It's $3.95 for that trial set. It's harrys.com/Anfield. We'll get back on with the show.
And it's John Gibbons for the weekend. And you will have seen across, of course, the news over the last few weeks, the idea of supporters returning to football grounds and other sports as well. I've seen cricket starting to introduce it. And obviously, one of the downsides of not being in the ground over the last few months is we haven't seen our team lift the Premier League. But when will we be around to watch Liverpool in person in grounds? That is the question. And to talk a little bit about that, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Aoife Hunt, who works for the company Movement Strategies, who've been advising the Sports Ground Safety Authority just on this idea of social distancing at sports venues. Aoife, welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Hi, John. Thank you.
So if you could just first of all fill us in over what you have been doing over the last sort of 2 or 3 months in terms of, you know, advising on social distancing within grounds and what is possible and what is likely not to be.
Well, we've been working with sports grounds across the UK and also the Sports Ground Safety Authority to understand the challenges that stadiums are now going to face and the impact that social distancing will have at every step of the spectator journey. So, you know, we're very proud to be working alongside the authorities to evaluate the guidance that's been released and the test events that you've just mentioned are going on.
Yeah.
You know, really to support sports grounds as they plan for the return of spectators. In terms of planning, I mean, a large amount of planning is needed for any sort of crowded event. And actually, we're used to planning for large, dense crowds, as you can imagine. And now it's sort of been turned on its head. It's all about ensuring that visitors have enough space to meet the guidelines and, you know, reduce the risk of virus transmission. So to help with this, the guidance that's been released is there to help support clubs who are starting their planning for when the government does allow venues to open at reduced capacity.
Does it vary a lot, sort of venue to venue, in terms of what would be possible? Because I've noticed, as I say, this week, crowds introduced in cricket. Now, cricket, it tends to be in bowls. There's lots of space. Entrance in and out tends to be kind of quite open, I would say. Whereas for football grounds, especially ones like Anfield, which is very compact, you know, it's built in residential areas, you know, with thin turnstiles, getting thinner year after year, I'll be honest with you. You know, there's a little bit more to think about. So I guess all those things are things that you have to consider. It's not just a one-size-fits-all kind of rule.
Absolutely. There isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. And that's one of the reasons why these test events have been held in a selection of sports grounds, so indoor, outdoor, seated and standing, because every venue is different and they all have their own peculiarities. So for football clubs such as Liverpool, the Stadium Safety and Security Management will be tasked with recalculating across the whole stadium the numbers of spectators that can safely fit in and reshaping the way the whole ground works to prepare for that opening. But there are some common themes across what grounds will have to do. So they'll all have to manage their entry processes differently. You mentioned turnstiles there. So there's going to need to be more space in queues so that spectators can space out before the turnstiles. There might be more checks, so temperature checks, and things like security searches might have to work a bit differently. And it's going to take, you know, it's going to take longer to load the stadium seats, because if you're spaced apart, you move more slowly. I don't know if you remember from Parliament arriving to vote back in June. It took an hour and 20 minutes, I think, to load Parliament. And so stadiums, of course, will have some of the issues. And I think really they're going to be looking to find more space to use to get people moving in the site.
Yeah, I think it's been funny to kind of observe it and for football fans talking, because, you know, it's always things that we don't necessarily think about. And so, you know, the idea of people sat in stadiums, you know, three seats all apart from each other, all think, well, that would be okay. You know, it's not ideal, but I could see how that could work. But obviously people move around. It's terrible. I wouldn't encourage it myself, but people could move around. People still sit on the toilets. And then also people all quite like to leave around the same time, which is when the football finishes. And so how do you sort of plan for that?
Well, so, yeah, for spectators in the stadium, I mean, the seating bowl is one thing, but as you said, everything's changed. So getting to and from the ground, the arrangement in accessing the viewing area. But, you know, things that wouldn't have been considered in such detail before, as, you know, the use of toilet facilities, yeah, food and beverage facilities. So, you know, some old habits might need to change a little. Spectators might not be able to use the usual turnstile or toilet or bar. And I think it's going to need fans and clubs working together to make sure it works. I know that, I mean, obviously communication is going to be really important. And the Sports Ground Safety Authority have recommended a code of conduct so that the grounds and the fans come together to agree a way of sort of behaving in the new normal. But, you know, it's going to look very different. There's going to be new signage, new processes, new queues, and again, detailed management where we're not used to being managed, for example, on the way to the toilet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So how close do you think we are, Aoife? And I know it's maybe a tough question to ask, but I've seen a few rumours today around the idea of the Community Shield game, which is the end of August, maybe trialling 20,000 fans. I don't know how that's true. To be honest, a friend just WhatsApped me that, so that might be nonsense. But you know, this is the research levels you get on the Anfield app. But, you know, how close are we, do you think, to seeing sort of stadium, football stadiums, you know, a quarter, maybe even a third full?
Well, you know, we haven't received any information on football test events formally yet, but I would suggest that it's sensible for there to be tests at football grounds in the same way, as you said, that there is for cricket, racing and snooker, so that plans can be assessed and refined. But really, the timescale is up to the government. The clubs now have the opportunity to start planning with the guidance so they can get the plans ready. But it really needs the government to give the go ahead for when they can open. But the advantage is now we have this time to start planning. And that's certainly what the Safety and Security Management at Anfield will be looking to do.
Well, hopefully, as soon as possible will be fantastic. Is it also a case that you're also having a look at what's going on in other countries? Because one of the benefits to Project Restart and the Premier League was that we got to see what was going on in the Bundesliga and learn from sort of what they're doing. I know in Denmark, for example, there's people back in football stadiums and things like that. Is that something that either you're doing or that other people are doing and seeing, I guess, learning or otherwise kind of what from what other countries are doing and maybe adapting that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the UK authorities have been looking to what's happening in other countries and in other types of sports grounds. Our involvement is very focused on the UK effort and looking at what's happening at these test events. But of course, there are similarities across the board. And we'll be looking to take best practice from other sporting events, other countries, but really focusing on these test events to check that the UK guidance is going to work for sports grounds in the UK.
And so from these test events then, how do you speak to the people who were there? Do you get sort of their feedback? Because I'm sort of as much interested in that really as I am kind of from a safety point of view. You know, obviously, you know, these test events, you know, you guys and everyone else are hoping that it goes smoothly and that people are in and out. But I'm wondering whether you speak to, you know, the customers, if you like, or the viewers on this and say, well kind of how was it for you? And is this a way, a fun way for you to watch sports, or would you rather just wait to see, you know, when it's all back to normal, if it normal exists?
Well, I'm sure we'll get the chance to speak to some spectators. I mean, the focus of our observations really is looking at it from an operational perspective and looking at how it all works on the ground. But all the reporting so far seems to indicate that supporters are delighted to be back watching live sport and that the experience hasn't been, hasn't been too detracted from. But certainly we'll be looking at assessing what that means for spectators as they move through. And our assessment of their experience will really look at whether or not they're in long queues or in uncomfortable environments and whether or not there's enough space for them to act the way that they want to. But I'll be sure to ask some spectators on the ground when I'm there.
Well, let us know. But in the meantime, huge thanks to Dr. Aoife Hunt. As I said, she's from Movement Strategies, which are currently advising on football fans back into grounds, well, back into sports grounds. And that's what we're all hoping to see sooner rather than later. So thanks huge amounts for your time and insight there. Thanks a lot to me for all those wonderful inserts. And now we're going to talk about transfers, and things are starting to happen a little bit. Dejan Lovren's gone. We've got a little bit of money for him. We talked about that in part one, but it shows that there is a market there a little bit to sell and a little bit more certainty. I'll start with you, Carl. Around, you know, a month or two ago when you know, Jürgen was asked a lot about transfers and it was around the Timo Werner kind of situation. What Jürgen tried to talk about was uncertainty about not knowing what we were coming back to, not knowing what next season would look like. It does feel now we're starting to see a little bit of a settling down, obviously, that we know when the season's starting, because we've got a date for the Charity Shield. And you just feel like a little bit of normality is maybe starting to creep back into football, and that might mean a few more players moving around than we expected.
Well, City have started, haven't they? They've gone big already. But it is going to be a bit of a weird transfer window, because there's every chance that no one buys anyone apart from Man City, or, you know, people who are suddenly 40 million or suddenly 15 million because there's not much money going around. But I think it's going to be pretty much what it always was, to be honest, because now the game's up again and, you know, we might be able to get in the ground sometime in October, maybe sometime in November. Then I think that the transfer window is going to be pretty much what it normally is. We'll get someone for about 40 million. We'll get lots of people for 10 million. This is what we tend to usually do. And, you know, there are holes to fill. Obviously, you know, those three have gone, even though we could only remember two of them. But, you know, other people have gone. There's people like Gruwich as well. What to do about him? What to do about Harry Wilson? Are they going to stay? Are they going to go? But I can see us just playing the transfer window like we normally do. So I know Neil said yesterday that he reckons we're going to start buying in the second half of the window, which I think I agree with, just to see what the others do first. It's not as if we've got to buy them. It's not like 2015 where we've got to buy 10 players for no reason and then sell them all last week. But, you know, we haven't got to do that anymore. So I think it's going to be a late window for us. And you know, for City to jump out straight away and say 41 million, which is an extraordinary decision in my eye, I think. But then I think we'll see what we'll do.
I've just been trying to spend the second half of that call trying to work out if Lazar Markovic is still here.
He's gone. That's the thing, isn't it? About the, is he still a player of ours? I completely. Yeah. In fact, I read something the other day about, you know, when Liverpool sell Wilson, and I read it as Wisden. I thought, we've still got Andre Wisden. Is he on loan again for his 15th club?
Who knows? Text him. You know
where is Andre Wisden? He's furious about Fredo still.
Chloe, it does feel like things are starting to happen, and also we're seeing a few more sensible sort of fees, I would say. Manchester City have signed Torres for £25 million. It looks like they were holding out originally for over 40, but that's come down a bit. We're also seeing apparently Bayern dropping the price for Thiago, which is potentially good news for Michael Edwards. And so do you think what maybe Liverpool are waiting for, and what maybe a few clubs are waiting for, and just to see what the market is, and just to see what sort of value is really, and the idea of clubs probably accepting that they have to drop the prices a little bit lower than what they might have done 12 months ago?
Yeah, I think everyone bar maybe the likes of Chelsea have already spent 60 million on Timo Werner, and then I've heard like 60 million on Ziyech. I think apart from them, everyone else is waiting for the first proper buy, because then from the first proper buy you can kind of gather how much, you know, people are willing to spend. I remember like maybe last season we wanted 20 million for Degsy and we only got 11, which is more than I expected anyway. So, you know, we've never really been big on transfers. You know, we've only ever bought players from the money that we make and the money that we earn. And last year, I think we got the most money in marketing and in, you know, TV commercials and everything, and winning out of the whole
thing. We've got the coconut money. We've got the coconut money.
That sweet coconut money.
I think we buy like Harvey Elliott and that's it. So, you know, I think Thiago is one that I find really strange, because he's like 29 and he's a great player. He's got great ability. But I didn't see us going for him. And this rumour's been going on for a good couple of months now. And it's just getting to a point of, can someone just actually do something, please? So I'm not just grasping at straws, because I'm losing my mind here. Like, buy him if we're buying him. If not, could you, like, just let me know? Because I don't know where we go from here, because every other team will invest. The likes of City will invest hard. You know, 40 million bid on Ake already, who, for me, they've got Laporte's injury is ridiculous. Nathan Ake is one to join that list. I don't know why you'd buy him when he's got this many injuries in a season. Yeah. He's a good player, but he's so injury prone, it's ridiculous. And for me, everyone's going to get better. And everyone's going to reinforce. And, you know, when Man United bought Fernandes, people, maybe it was because we were linked with him and we didn't get him. Everyone was like, oh, you wouldn't spend that much on him. But if we're being honest, he's a class player. He's good. Like, I can't lie about that. And I'd love a creative midfielder. I'd love another striker for when one of our front three. That was the good thing about Werner for me. He could play across the front three. He wasn't just a striker. He could play on the wings. He could cover any of the front three, where I think it's hard to find someone like that. But everyone else will be investing. I think we have to do something. I think Jürgen Klopp will have his plans set out. I think he'll just be waiting for the go-ahead, and he'll be waiting to, you know, you don't want to be that person to put a disrespectful bid in, like, you know, Arsenal when they paid £1 over the fee for Suarez. Because then people are just going to play hard to get with you for players. And I think whoever does the first bid, it'll then have a knock-on effect of every other club bidding.
I must say, James, Chloe doesn't know she's born, saying she's going mad with all this indecision. Back when we were kids, when we had to ring team talk to find out what was going on, do you know what I mean? Now, the information's at your fingertips, do you know what I mean?
Phone text, wasn't it?
Yeah, the transfer page on there. Yeah. We've got some money in for Lovren, which shows that, I think hopefully chose to Liverpool that there'll be money there for saleable assets, and I think that's something they probably were worried about, is that we'll actually, you know, if we do need to bring some money in, is that going to be possible? I'm hoping the Lovren thing makes us realise that I don't know who we're looking to sell this summer. I think we could all cobble together a list that would be fairly sort of accurate, but whoever it is on that list, I think they'll probably, after now Lovren's gone through, there'll be a bit more confidence. Okay, well, we probably can raise 30-40 million pounds for sale, so maybe we can do a Thiago as well as a few other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd be surprised if Shaqiri stays after this window. I think Origi, another one that I think, you know, someone who's probably desperate for regular first team football at this point in his career, having lifted trophies. I agree with everything Chloe said, really. I think I think it's quite easy for us to sit here, you know, and identify players that we need and positions that need to be filled. You know, that we still haven't got cover for Andy Robbo. I mean, obviously, you know, we've got some of the youngsters coming through. I think the Lallana replacement, I think, is quite an easy one. I think Curtis Jones can fill that role quite. But yeah, we do need to spend money. It's a really difficult one, and the way this club's operated over the past few years has been absolutely bob on the money with regarding transfers, identifying players, getting them in, no fanfare, it just happens. So I'd love to think that even in the middle of this pandemic, with all the uncertainty that's gone on, and obviously the finances have taken a hit, I'd love to think that behind the scenes that's all been still ticking along, and actually, you know, the second half of the window we do put our toe in the water, because we need three or four lads in. I think that's, you know, at the very least. But all saying that, you know, Klopp does trust the youngsters coming through. He does put faith in them, and he does bring them on, and I think they've got, you know, the three lads specifically have got a big season, a big part to play in the next season. But we do need to spend some money. That much is true, and we need some cover. And I'm still Mbappe 2021. So, you know.
So let's hold something a little bit back for that. Ian, where you put faith in the manager and the transfer team now is not just signing good players, but the right players for this football club. And Jürgen has said it again recently, where he's talked about, you know, not just collecting players for the sake of it, but also them as people being just as important as well as, like, as footballers. And he said you can sign players who are a problem and we don't want them. The squad unity is so strong and the culture is so good within this football club that you know, you need to fit into that as much as the style of play.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I've got complete 100% faith in everything that Jürgen and the team do. And they are buying players for mentality. That's why he can describe us in the season as mentality monsters, because he knows how his players think. It's not just about the ability of the ball. It can actually bring to the squad. I think Thiago is a very good shout, because we've just let two figures with real influence go. So as we've spoken about how influential Lallana was in the dressing room, how you need somebody with experience to bring through younger players, then Thiago would be a great figure to bring that through. I also think there's a very definite possibility of a world where James Milner kicks off in a lead chair at the beginning of the next season. Because if I'm Milner and my boyhood club has just come up to the Premiership, and I've got a chance of playing for them one last time, I'm going to take that chance. And if I'm Jürgen Klopp, I'm letting him go on a free transfer, because he's been one of the best things we've ever done. He's been an incredible purchase. So I could genuinely see Milner moving on. So Thiago is filling that. I do think we need cover left back, as James said, because we haven't got anyone coming through. Larucci is being let go, isn't he? He's on his way. Adam Lewis, I think it is, that they were talking about possibly coming through. It looks like he's the favourite to come through. Up front, I would imagine Brewster's coming back from Swansea. I think he could make an impact next season, the way he's been looking, the way he's been scoring goals, I think he could actually do something, which gives us the front three, Minamino, Brewster, maybe Chamberlain in there, although he's never convincing in that front role for me. But I would like to see somebody force. I think missing out on Vane is a massive miss, because I think the quality of the lad in all three positions would have been fantastic for us. It would have allowed more rotation. So somebody for across the front, that middle. And I don't see a world where we're not signing a centre-back because Lovren's gone and we know that both Mata and Gomez had injury issues. Am I still here? Or has the signal gone again?
No, we're listening. We're listening.
So I think that...
You've sold a lot of them.
I think... I've sold everybody.
I honestly thought I was going to go to you, Ian, and you were going to be like, listen, we're champions. We hardly need any. What are all these kids on about? We're brilliant. One in. Honestly, you've just ripped the whole squad apart. I can't believe it.
I'm rebuilding.
Fuck him. Yes, what have they done recently? Absolutely brilliant. Listen,
well, we'll if it's okay, well, I won't be asked.
Listen, we'll leave it there. But hey, the most important signing for next year has happened. It's been announced today that Thomas the Throwing Fella is back for 2021.
And,
and as they famously say, when you've got the best throwing coach in the world, everything else looks after itself.
Is it worth actually playing the league now? Should we just not bother? Surely it's done.
Oh, pack it in. We'll leave it there for this week's weekend. A huge thanks to Carl, to Ian, to Amelia, to Chloe, and to James Sitton. That's been really good fun. Up the Reds. Loads more going on at the weekend. Oh, we've got a really good interview coming out this weekend as well with another champion. It's our third Liverpool League winner interview coming out this weekend. So look out for that. But in the meantime, thanks a lot and up the Reds.
Sports Social Podcast Network.